This episode is brought to you in part by Richmond Graduate University. The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly. Richmond Graduate University can equip you to become a licensed professional counselor, integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmond.edu.
Hey friends, we're glad you're with us. Welcome to another episode of Lit Pulpit. We are jumping into Walker Percy's The Moviegoer. This is our first full-fledged conversation on the novel. We're approaching it thematically over a few different episodes. And today we are going to be talking about the idea of the search in Walker Percy's The Moviegoer. If you want to start to wrap your head around this idea of the search, I've got a great quote that I think points us in the right direction. The writer Julian Barnes, an atheist writer, opened his novel or a recent nonfiction work with this sentence: "I don't believe in God, but I miss him." And this sort of idea of longing for something deeper, the sort of spiritual connection, but not really believing in it, but at the same time longing for it, being haunted by this thing that you don't actually believe in, but maybe sort of want to, really captures a lot of the spirit of this novel, The Moviegoer, which is why, though this novel came out in 1961, it could work in so many ways to our experiences today. So we're going to be talking about the search. What does that mean in this novel? And how does that give us insight into our own experience and our own condition? As always, I'm joined with Pastor Austin Carty. Lit Pulpit is a tag team duo. Pastor is looking at literature for all those who will listen in and trying to see what good literature teaches us about how we are to live, move, and be as image bearers of God in this world. So, Austin, when you think about The Moviegoer, you think about Binks, the protagonist, about to turn 30 in New Orleans, a stockbroker, a womanizer, trying to kind of find his way, longing for redemption, but not really believing in it, seeking it out, all of these different things summed up in this idea of the search. What comes to mind when you think about Binks and this longing for the search?
Well, first of all, I'd rather have no tag team partner for this endeavor than you. I'm excited to pick up this new book with you, my friend. And I love that you just started with that Julian Barnes quote. And listeners, I promise we didn't prep that or plan that. We actually had talked a little bit on the front end, but that didn't even come up. And I'm so glad that you mentioned that one, because I remember that in Jamie Smith's How Not to Be Secular, his distillation of Charles Taylor's massive tome, A Secular Age, he uses that quote as an example of the cross pressures that we feel in late modernity. And this is a hearkening to an idea that Charles Taylor had about how those of us who have robust belief have periods of time where we wrestle with doubt, and how even the most strident doubters and disbelievers have moments where something happens that they think, well, but maybe could there be something else, something more? And he calls that the cross pressures that are inherent for everybody living in late modernity. And the reason I think that's such a great place to begin is because for everybody who's familiar with Charles Taylor listening in, and over the last 15, 20 years, Charles Taylor's name is one that has become more and more ascendant within Christianity in general and evangelicalism in particular. If you've read Taylor or just heard about Taylor and are fascinated at all with any of Taylor's project or what you know of it, this is a great fictional window into what Taylor is teasing out in his wider corpus. One of the terms you'll probably hear Claude and I talk about over the course of these next four sessions on The Moviegoer is the word malaise. And Charles Taylor has a little book called The Malaise of Modernity. And it all talks about this aspect of living in a reality in which it almost feels like there's a curtain between us and the world, a curtain for those who are even people of faith between us and God. And I think that hearkening the Julian Barnes quote saying, I don't believe in God, but I miss him is a great way of talking about this book, because it's all about a search for finding meaning in a world in which things seem meaningless. And to kind of tie together all of this on the Julian Barnes, Charles Taylor front, one of the things that Charles Taylor points at that I think is a really helpful thing to hold on to is as we read a book like The Moviegoer, and as we go through our daily lives as folks living in late modernity, is that Taylor points out how the conditions of belief up until late modernity were really such that meaning, if such a thing were around, was out there. It was something that was outside of us. It was external to us. And we tried to figure out what it out there all meant. But then there was a shift in conditions of belief to where it became internal, that the agent was the one that was responsible for figuring out what meaning there might be. And that's really, really powerful and important, because then suddenly it's not as if we're trying to piece together a meaning that's out there. Now it's how can I try to make meaning out of something that's quite possibly and most likely is meaningless? Now, I don't think it's meaningless. I tend to be one that, and as much as a late modern person can, you know, really does, you know, still hold to the perspective that there's an out there to derive meaning from. But nonetheless, these are the conditions that we live in now. We are such that we don't step out and immediately think we're beholding a mystery. We look out and think we're beholding a problem that we can solve versus a mystery to be explored. And that's underneath this novel. It's a human being wrestling with the fact that he doesn't know whether God's out there, whether that was even just a figment of the human imagination, but whether so or whether not, what does it all mean? And to greater or lesser degrees, that's something that all of us in late modernity are wrestling with and asking.
And Binks is really trying to figure out what it all means. And this is what he is referring to when he talks about the search. And this theme, the search, it comes up persistently throughout the novel, but it comes immediately, right? Early in the novel, page 13, there's a section I want to read. And I think this is a great way that sort of puts us into the sort of tone of the novel. We get inside of how Binks sees. He's a deep thinker. He's a really observant person. He is shallow in some senses and really deep in other senses. But this sort of excerpt, I think, really captures this idea of the search and the sort of longing that we heard in the Barnes quote, and that Austin, you've been speaking to, drawing from Taylor and from others. So to set this up, the novel is set in New Orleans. It's set a few days before Ash Wednesday. Walker Percy was a devout Catholic, so that's no surprise. And it's interesting, this setting, you know, New Orleans, you can think of a place for Mardi Gras, right? And you can think of sort of flesh and party and hedonism. It's also a deeply religious place as well, right? And you can see those cross pressures, those tensions that are there. So this scene comes when Binks is on a bus. Binks sees a woman, an attractive woman, a Texan. You can hear his inner monologue through all of that. And he's sort of longing for connection with this woman. And notice the shift from his sort of mental dialogue around the woman into this deeper longing. This is on the top of page 13. So Binks is thinking about, he wishes he could talk to the woman and make a connection with her and have a relationship and know her and all these sort of things. Begins this way. What consideration and tenderness I could show her. If it were a movie, I would have only to wait. The bus would get lost, or the city would be bombed, and she and I would tend the wounded. As it is, I may well stop thinking about her. Then it is that the idea of the search occurs to me. I become absorbed, and for a minute or so, forget about the girl. What is the nature of the search, you ask? Really, it's very simple, at least for a fellow like me, so simple that it is easily overlooked. The search is what anyone would undertake if he were not sunk in the everydayness of his own life. The morning, for example, I felt as if I had come to myself on a strange island. What does such a castaway do? Why, he pokes around the neighborhood, and he doesn't miss a trick. To become aware of the possibility of the search is to be on to something. To not be onto something is to be in despair. The movies are onto the search, but they screw it up. The search always ends in despair. They like to show a fellow coming to himself in a strange place, but what does he do? He takes up with the local librarian, sets about proving to the local children what a nice fellow he is, and settles down with a vengeance. In 2 weeks' time, he's so sunk in everydayness that he might just as well be dead. So I could keep going. This theme of the search continues over the next probably page and a half. But I think this gets us into who Binks is, and it gets us into this idea of the search. And, you know, in this scene, Austin, I'm really curious to hear what sort of comes to mind for you, what you draw from this scene, having encountered the novel more than once. This is my first read through. But it's striking to me that he's longing for the sort of union, the sort of connection with this woman. And he wishes life were like what he sees in the movie. He wishes things were simple. He wishes for this sort of mediated existence where everything would just be easy and he would have this particular connection. And then he realizes, well, that's not the way it is. And then he's confronted through the gap between the way movies are and the way life really is. In that gap, he thinks, oh, the search. And now he's trying to see, okay, what makes sense of this everydayness? What makes sense of this longing that I'm projecting onto this woman? Here I am, confronted with the cross pressure of this question of the search. What stands out to you in this first key point in the novel where we're introduced to the concept of the search and Binks' sort of understanding of this particular longing?
So much does. It's a powerful passage, and it sets the table for the rest of the book. And one of the things that I find ironic and also that's just a helpful window into thinking about this human dilemma is that for me, an appreciation of the everyday and the capacity to see God's presence in the everyday is actually the way through and out of the malaise of late modernity, in my view. But the way he's talking about the everydayness is the kind of everydayness he describes it. One of the really kind of powerful images in the book for me is when he talks about how being in his, I think it's a Dodge he's driving, doesn't matter, but the brand name matters. He's talking about a brand that's advertised just like other things are advertised. He's in the car and he calls riding in the car that he calls the vehicle an incubator of the malaise. Like he's there, now the world is mediated again. There's a windshield that he's having to look out at it through, and just the day-to-day transition from place to place in this little hollowed, isolated vehicle that's cutting you off from your direct connection to the world. But then it maps on to all the other things that happen just in the mundane aspects of our lives. And, you know, you think about all the things that we do now is just, you know, people living in, you know, the and right in 2023, the wake up and the daily commute and the various routines that we go through and the way that things are on autopilot and the way that we constantly try to distract ourselves by, you know, popping onto social media or whatever the other things are. He, in one of these places, he refers to somebody as a movie goer, even though that person doesn't go to movies. And he's talking about how that can be just a distraction from the heaviness of just of being alive. But the everydayness to me, it doesn't have to be seen that way. That, and you see, I think Percy's devout Catholicism coming through here and showing how Christian faith is in fact a really robust answer to this human predicament. There, towards the end, when he sees that he is going to just have to live a life that is, that he calls selfish, but I don't think selfish is the right word. That's just attending to his daily duties and realizing that he's not going to overcome this human aspect of himself that does think about self-gain and things at sometimes. But it ends on this moment where he sees somebody going to an Ash Wednesday service. And he wonders, is this just something that this person's doing to show that he knows how to climb the ranks of society and is arriving, or is this some sort of sign of real true faith that God actually is here. And he says, maybe it's possible that he shows up for the one and that the second happens, which is this saying of like, we show up as human beings and we attend to the messiness and the crookedness of the human timber, as Immanuel Kant would say, but yet there's this capacity of God to arrive in it, you know, and and that to me is a really powerful response to flipping the idea of the everydayness on its head. But for Binks, to kind of put a pin in this long rambling answer of mine, he sees the search as now he's on a horizontal search. He'd originally been on a vertical search, which is one where he was trying to explain everything. He was trying to figure out the theory of everything, and he was reading books like Plato and books like, this one isn't on here, but, like A Brief History of Time, things that are trying to explain it all. And he says that he finally gotten to where he thought that he understood it all, but what was left over was himself. And that's a very Kierkegaardian line right there. But then he said, from that moment on, what did that matter if you figured out it all, but you're still left over? Like there's this, this leftover that's irreducible that is the self. And that's when he went on the horizontal search. And the horizontal search has to always feel alive, he thinks. It has to be a somebody somewhere. It has to have place and name. One of the strong themes of this is that when he talks about most people are just content being an anyone from anywhere. But Binks can't be. He feels like if he's not certified, that's another great line in this, that if there's not something to certify, here's who this person is, here's who I am, and here's where I come from, and here's my connection to the place. So I find all of that really, really powerful and themes that really mean a lot to me.
Do you think in this section right here, where we just read from, that you're speaking from and speaking to, Binks seems to be putting in opposition the idea of the search and everydayness. They're opposing sort of entities that are at war with each other, right? He says, the search is what anyone would undertake if he were not sunk in the everydayness of his own life. So is he saying, right, do you think the everydayness of life, he trades stocks. It's not super exciting, right? We haven't talked about his family dynamics, his cousin Kate, his aunt, all these different sort of things. He's caught up in kind of like the bureaucracy and the kind of church politics-y dynamics of mid-20th century Catholic New Orleans, all these different sort of things, right? So everydayness is sort of this inhibitor from going into the search, right? So everyday life keeps you away from finding deep meaning. Is that fair? Do you see that as oppositional? That's where he starts, right?
I think that's really great, Claude. And I think that's a great way to kind of tag this first episode is that to me, yes, that's exactly what it is. And as a pastor reading this book, I think one of the ways to view this is to, instead of thinking about everydayness being in opposition to the search, to think about how there is a way that everydayness is the way really through and into the search. But it depends on what we understand everydayness to be and how attentive we are to the everyday. I think that that's a rich place to maybe point forward to the next conversation, because in the next conversation, we're going to talk specifically about the way religion and God are treated in this novel. And as I'd hearkened to earlier, I think one of the things about this novel that we can see is that there's a way to think about how we can find God in the everyday. But I think you're absolutely right that in this book, it's set up as if everydayness is somehow in competition with the search. And there is so much important about the family history here. He comes from kind of Southern aristocracy. One of the things about this book too that's important to say is that the reason that this book abides in the canon, I think, is because it really is still pertinent to what it means to be human in late modernity. But there's a lot that's really objectionable in this book in the way that just social issues and situations are described and talked about. And one of the reasons that that's just so powerful is not only that it's describing, reality in, 1960, but moreover, it's because of the station in life that this character has come from. So there are things in reading this book that, reader beware, we read and rightly, take great exception to.
Yeah, because we would say, right, we would say within the Christian frame, rightly understood, that the search fills the everyday with meaning, right? Especially if we're thinking in sacramental terms, or in terms that God is at work in the world, and God works, and God is present through how we live, move, and have our being, right? But that's not what Binks is experiencing, or the vantage point Binks is operating from, at least at the beginning of the novel. There maybe is an argument to say he goes on a bit of a journey. He does go on a journey, literally and metaphorically, and maybe he does get there towards the end, where he starts to see, oh, okay, there is goodness in the everyday. Meaning can be found in the everyday. That this is a possibility. They don't have to be at odds. But at the same time, I think we can see that if our everyday is sort of aimless and hopeless, and we are stuck in this malaise or this obsession with accumulating more, proving ourselves, demonstrating we are, as the novel likes to talk about, certified, right? All of these different things, that sort of everydayness can block us from undertaking the search. It's interesting that, you know, the novel really does center, I think, on Binks and then on Kate, but there's other characters that, even if they are only appear for a moment, they are really important. You know, one is his Uncle Jules. This comes on page 31. He says, Uncle Jules is the only man I know whose victory in the world is total and unqualified. He has made a great deal of money. He has a great many friends. He was Rex of Mardi Gras. He gives freely of himself and his money. He is an exemplary Catholic, but it's hard to know why he takes the trouble. So here you can see the everyday in the search, right? Deeper spiritual, deeper true meaning versus everyday. He's got everything in the everyday in the world. You know, why is he engaged in this thing? He goes on to say, for the world that he lives in, the city of man, is so pleasant that the city of God must hold little in store for him. And then Binks says, I see his world plainly through his eyes, and I see why he loves it and would keep it as it is. A friendly, easygoing place of old world charm and new world business methods, where kind white folks and carefree, he says, darkies, have the good sense to behave pleasantly toward each other. No shadow ever crosses his face, except when someone raises the subject of last year's Tulane versus LSU game. So here's a description of someone that he admires, his uncle. Got money, got reputation, got religious credentials, right? He's got it. He's got it so made that the only thing that really bothers him is, you know, when his beloved college football team doesn't do well. So I think here's an example of somebody who's killing it in the everyday, maybe, right, in that sort of air quote positive sense, and that keeps them from the search, right? Moving from the city of man to the city of God, journeying forward to know who God is, and feeling and experiencing deeper spiritual union and redemption, that then changes how we live in the everyday. This Uncle Jules got it made in the everyday. So in that sense, he is blocked out from the search. And as Binks sees it at that juncture, it all makes sense. You know, why would he have interest in this sort of deeper or religious things, maybe not necessarily deeper things? Why would he have interest in religious things when he has when he's certified in every other domain and in every other measure? So I think that, you know, complicates or adds another layer to what we read earlier on page 13, you know, Binks' initial sort of declaration around the search.
That's all really good. That's really good, Claude. And I think one of the things that's so powerful in his way of looking at Jules and at his aunt is that they represent, like, not just a generational transition, but a shift in the way that humanity views and understands itself. There's at the end, and we can get into this in one of our upcoming episodes, when his aunt is essentially disowning him. She's saying, I finally have figured it out. Like, your generation feels no obligations that we did. And it really seems to kind of represent what now sociologist Byung-Chul Han refers to as a shift from a should society to a could society. Not here's what one's obligation is, what one should do, but here are all the options of what one could do. And we can talk about how Kate has this realization that that all the shoulds can be thrown off, but then the real burden comes from all these coulds. Like, actually, I'd be happier if somebody told me I should do this or should do this, should do this. But now there's nothing telling me what I'm supposed to do. I could do anything. And so now that's even more burdensome because it's on me to figure it out than if there were a should that I could just rail against. And I think that's one of the things that we really, you know, wrestle with, you know, in the 21st century. And let's pick that one up in the next spot.
Yeah. And I think that's a really sharp observation. I think so. Then maybe what we're moving towards, kind of working observations here, unfolding through discussion, which is how we learn, right? And especially when we're reading a layered and dynamic text like this one. So maybe there's different definitions of everydayness, right? Or different sort of ways to embody that, to embody the everyday. So I think maybe the novel, what we're getting at is, you know, looking at Kate and her sort of her breakdowns, right, that come around being untethered from like, who am I? What am I supposed to do? Like, what, you know, where's my purpose? She's just grasping. So maybe what we're getting towards is this idea that an everydayness that removes any sort of should dynamic, any sort of tethered grounding in our relation, in our being, puts us into this sort of malaise, right? It begins to sort of shrink us in a way. And through these different cross pressures, we can then break forth through these moments, right? Like Banks on the bus, recognizing these gaps, it might open us up to the search. The search properly undertaken will show us how we can exist in the everyday with new meaning, with deeper purpose, with a sense of not just an existence that's floating. Binks talks about he doesn't just want to be some random person that could be anywhere, but a particular somebody in a particular story, in a particular place, connected to others through God, right? But in that relation, now everything is filled with meaning, even the ordinary. It doesn't just have to be the thrill of a movie. So maybe there's these different notions of the everyday that begin to shape how we live. So we covered a lot of ground, man.
That was really, really good stuff. And we've only just begun, gang. I mean,
this
is just episode number one. And there's so many coulds. I mean, all these coulds of what we could do with the next three.
Yeah.
All this pressure.
Yeah. This is one of those few. I'm glad you brought that up around Kate and what she does speak about wanting clear direction, wanting to be told you need to do this, you should do this, because we usually think of that obligation as negative. But here we're shown how it can be a way into meaning and grounding into the search as well. So, folks, I would suggest picking up this novel. It is a really important novel. In sort of larger American context, but as you can tell, it speaks directly to our kind of modern moment and heart, even in the present. And it's something that's really keen and really sharp, astutely observed, and is worth the engagement. Well worth the engagement. So pick up a copy of The Moviegoer, read along with us. There'll be links in the show notes to our Facebook group. You can drop questions and see what we're up to there. Would love to read along with y'all in that particular way. If you've enjoyed this, share with friends. You can rate, review, comment, all that good stuff. And we'll be back in your podcast player or app of choice real quick with another episode on The Moviegoer. So in the meantime, keep reading, and we'll catch up with y'all soon. Thanks.